The Senate Education Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 16, 2012. The time is approximately 8:04 a.m. Committee members present are Co-Chair Meyer, Senator French, and myself, Senator Thomas. We know that Senator Stevens will not be here. He's in a closeout of the Fish and Game Subcommittee. Not sure of Senator Vice Chair Davis's status at this point in time. But we do have a quorum to conduct business. Today, the committee will hear from the governor's nominees for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission and the Board of Regents. All members should have a packet before them that do have the nominees' resumes and additional information on the boards and commissions that are before us today. So with that, we will first hear from the nominees for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. The commission is comprised of 9 members appointed by the governor as follows. They must be actively engaged in teaching profession for 5 years immediately preceding the appointment. There must be 5 classroom teachers, 1 principal, 1 superintendent, 1 department representative, 1 higher education representative, and all of the appointees must have been selected from respective associations. Term is a 3-year term. Commission develops criteria of professional practices in areas of ethics, performance, professional services, and contractual obligations. It holds hearings to judge and sanction educators not meeting standards established by the commission and may suspend or revoke certificates of educators based on reasons set out in statute AS 14.20.030. First nominee for the commission is Jill M. X, who is joining us via teleconference. I believe this is her first appointment to the commission. Ms. X, please let me know if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, and correct me if not. If you would please come forward, or at least if you're at the desk or wherever you might be, if you'd put yourself on the record and tell us why you are interested in serving on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission.
Good morning. My name is Jill Exe, and I am calling in from Coctovic. I am looking forward to being reconfirmed for a second term with the Professional Teaching Practice Commission. It has been an incredible experience. I am a 19-year Alaskan teacher, and I have always been interested in advocating for the profession. We all want good teachers in every classroom, good principals at every site, and I feel that the Professional Teaching Practice Commission does an excellent job of ensuring that such things as due practice and that we follow through and make sure that everybody gets their due diligence and make sure that things have been investigated appropriately. And it has been a learning experience for me as well. There are a variety of cases that have come forward over the last 3 years. And we take each and every one to heart, and we look through the documentation, we ask questions, we clarify instances, and through it all, it is our effort to work towards the betterment of education in the state of Alaska.
Let the record reflect that Vice Chair Davis is with us. Do you have anything else to tell us before we open it up for questions?
No, I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Questions from any of the committee members? Senator French.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Ms. Exe. I just have a couple questions. Tell me a little bit more about the commission. I guess I'm not as familiar with it as I should be. How often does it meet? How many members and so forth?
There are 9 members on the commission, and we represent teachers, superintendents, principals, higher education. Each of those parties have representation. There are 5 classroom teachers, I believe, and we meet 3 times a year during the school year in Anchorage, and at that time We discuss cases that are brought forth to the commission, and at that time, you know, it's serious business. It's the talk of revoking or suspending teachers, certified staff members, contracts, or not their contracts, but their certificates. And the group that I've worked with, you know, all very dedicated to the profession of education. And again, that idea of want to have the best of the best, you know, in classrooms with kids as administrators. And we really work hard to make sure that due process is followed, that things have been, you know, deeply investigated, and any allegation is that there's evidence for that. So it's a different tact of education, but I've enjoyed being involved in that and just seeing how committed the state of Alaska is to making sure that we have people doing the right things in their jobs.
Oh, well, I just speaking for myself, and I'm sure for the rest of the committee, I'm thrilled that you want to serve. I think it's fantastic. We've got someone there from the northern regions in the state, and an elementary school teacher as well. Tell me this, are there some transgressions that automatically revoke someone's certificate, for example, conviction of a crime? And that's one question. The other question would be, do many of the people that come to you, have they already lost their jobs and are waiting to lose their licenses, or are they sometimes still working in the classrooms and, you know, with license or certificate actions pending against them? Tell me a little bit more about that, if you can.
I could talk about my experiences that I've had in the last 3 years. While they're being investigated, and it's dependent on you know, the issue, the concern. Excuse me, I gotta put my nose here. People can still be in their position throughout the investigation. Generally, there's some kind of district policy such that they may be on administrative leave or something like that. So, and it depends on the actual allegation as far as that is concerned. So, it's kind of a more final step in the process, and I think as such, that's why it's kind of a very formal situation. We have our director, Patricia Truman, make sure that we have all of the necessary documentation, and those decisions are not made lightly. So it does depend on the situation. In some situations, the teacher has been, or the administrator has been, removed from the position, has been let go, and the revoking the certificate is a means of making sure that they don't turn around and get into another educational employment or job. And with the ability to turn around and do the same thing again. So it's far-reaching in that regard. It's not just within one district. This is something that we're taking care of with teachers across the state, and sometimes that influence has to do with other states, all of the states of the United States as well.
Sure. And just to follow up on the first question, are there some transgressions that just automatically, you know, I guess I don't know if automatic is the right word, but you tell me if a teacher is convicted of a crime, say a DWI, is that automatic license revocation or no?
I can't speak directly to the DUI, but I can say that, yes, there are some circumstances that it's fairly obvious.
Sure.
That their certification will be revoked.
Sure. Probably DWI is a gray area. Last, yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, you could make a case for either way, depending on the circumstances, you know, all the circumstances. And last question, are the meetings?
And those circumstances are investigated thoroughly.
Sure, they are. And last question, are your meetings open to the public, or are they confidential because of the personnel actions?
Part of them is open to the public. We do go into executive session for personnel reasons. However, the public meeting is taped, recorded, and we have had members of the public come, so that's encouraged. If it has any, you know, it's always encouraged, but specifically if there are issues or concerns they want to bring forth to the commission in regards to changing policy, we were one issue was brought forth regarding it was hiring times, the windows that a teacher can sign a contract and then choose to renege on that, so to speak, and what is that window where they can be they're doing damage towards, you know, finding a good teacher for that classroom. And that was brought forth to us by a school district's HR department, and then that was something we discussed, and we changed our brochure a little bit because of that. And so we do have open doors.
Thank you. Thank you for your answers, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Exe, what would be an example of a contractual obligation that the board would be dealing with?
Well, it's kind of the dark side of education. We've dealt with issues, pornography on school computers, anything that's not ethically appropriate. We've dealt with educators being involved with students, kind of those kinds of things. I'd like to say that I would hope that all teachers and educators would know better, but there's to be some fairly unpleasant lines crossed sometimes, and in that regard we're pretty I wouldn't say harsh, because it is a process and we do follow that, but if there is unethical behavior, then having their certificate revoked is an option.
I understand the ethical part. I was curious about what kind of contractual relationship. Are you just looking at some kind of general tenets that exist, are written, signed by individual teachers, if there is an actual contract that, I guess that's...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Certainly, any teacher or anybody through affiliated with education, parents, community members, if they feel that something is not, if there is a behavior, if there is an action on the part of an educator that has a certificate, they can bring forth a complaint to the Professional Teaching Practice Commission, at which time Patricia Truman, our director, will investigate and follow through on those complaints. So there is a process in place, through the state of Alaska and the Professional Teaching Practice Commission. Complaints are filed. Those complaints are investigated, and if the situation is such that it requires or the intent is to not have that person in education, then their certification can be revoked.
Okay, thank you. And what would be the appeal process for the findings from your board?
There is an appeal process, and I've only been through that once, and they can the situation that I was involved in, we utilized the Professional Teaching Practice Commission lawyer, and there was a hearing. The teacher came on site to the Professional Teaching Practice Commission meetings and had their representation, and at that time the commission served somewhat like a jury. We listened to the both sides and make a recommendation.
But who does someone appeal to, I guess, is my question.
We are that body that makes that decision.
I understand that, but once you make your decision, what is the next step if somebody disagrees with your decision? They certainly don't come back to you. They must have a...
No, they don't, but at that point, we make a decision, and if the... And the decision goes to the Department of Education, and the certification is revoked. So beyond that, I have to say that I've never been involved in that circumstance.
Okay, thank you. Senator French.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know for sure, but I'll spend a few minutes looking. I'm going to guess that every citizen has a right to appeal to the Superior Court.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, are there other questions of Ms. Exe? Seeing none, there's nothing else regarding her or any objections. The Senate Education Committee will forward Ms. Exe's name on to a joint session of the legislature for consideration. Thank you, Ms. Exe, for being available today. And just a reminder, this does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the nominee during any further session. So with that... we thank you again, Ms. Exe, and we will move on to the next nominee for the commission is Louis Pondolfino. And also, let me know if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
That's correct.
Okay, great. This is, I believe, your second appointment to the commission. First appointment was in January of 2009. Mr. Pondolfino, welcome to the Senate Education Committee. If you would please join us, put yourself on the record, tell us why you're interested in continuing to serve on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission.
Sure. Good morning, Senators. Lou Pondolfino, before I get started, I have to just ask for your indulgence. I got off an airplane 4 hours ago. I was in Tampa where my colleague Denise Green Wilkinson, principal of Polaris, a K-12 school here in Anchorage, was just elevated to the presidency of our national organization representing 25,000 members nationwide, doing a lot of lobbying work in D.C. on behalf of children and our profession. So it was a unique opportunity for me to honor my colleague, and all of us in Alaska ought to be proud of that fact. But I'm a little bit bleary-eyed just getting off the plane. So I'll proceed with that in mind. Please, again, your indulgence. I'm the principal of King Career Center in Anchorage. It's my first year. Prior to that, I was 7 years principal of Service High School. Before that, 3 years as an assistant at East High School, and prior to that, 10 years in the classroom at three different schools here in Anchorage. And then prior to that, I was a blue-collar worker in Nome, learning how to build houses, and I did a little time working for the Alaska Gold Company. Also spent 4 or 5 memorable months working for Vico, Alaska, on a little project in Prince William Sound. And prior to that, I moved up from New York in 1982 when I graduated from undergraduate school in West Virginia. Interested because as a professional, I think it's our obligation, our duty to give back to our profession and to oversee our membership to make sure that we are performing as professionals and any ethical lapse of judgment or contractual violation is addressed appropriately. And it's a pleasure, it's been a pleasure working with the other eight members of the commission who are obviously folks from across the state. So that's also an added benefit to have that relationship with educators from across the state and working with Patricia Truman, our executive director and former Alaska Teacher of the Year. She's a consummate professional and does a thorough job investigating cases before they're brought to us. So with that, I'll answer any questions you have.
Okay, thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lou, good to hear from you again, and just want to let you know we miss you at Service High School, but you're doing a great job there at King Career. And I do appreciate you offering up your time and energy for this commission. I think you're a good example of just the right type of person we want for this commission. I do have a couple questions, though. I see that the composition of the commission is five teachers, one principal, one superintendent, one representative of the Office of Commissioner, and one representative of Alaska Institution of Higher Learning. I'm assuming you're going to fill the role of the principal?
Yes, that's my position.
Okay, great, Lou. And then also, this is your second term. During the first term, were any teaching certificates revoked? And if so, can you give us an example why that might be?
Yeah. Actually, my very first meeting on the commission, I had to recuse myself because there was an assistant principal whose certification was revoked for moral turpitude and I think criminal activity. Had to deal with theft of district equipment and gambling, in which he was arrested and convicted for. And then the revocations, and there's different levels of sanctions. Could be a reprimand, a suspension, a 1-year suspension, a suspension for life, or a revocation. And the latter two have the same effect. One is a little bit more strongly, administered, and we accept suspensions for life if the teacher or certificated person admits to his or her inability to perform the duties in the profession and to hold to the high standards of ethics that our profession has. And they've committed a very serious ethical lapse. There was a criminal case last year in Anchorage where a teacher had a sexual relationship with one or more students was arrested, convicted, and surrendered his certificate for life, and we accepted that. Patricia Truman investigates all the cases, makes recommendations, and then she brings those recommendations before us to consider. If there is any disagreement, either by the certificated member with her decision or by us, questions by us on whether it was the appropriate sanction, then we'll potentially have a hearing with the culprit, if you will, or the one being sanctioned, or we may just, as a body, overturn or decide differently from what Patricia's recommendations were. So those are a couple of cases. We hear most often breach of contract, and that happens very frequently, especially in Alaska, I think probably more so than in states in the lower 48. because young teachers come up here and the remoteness, depending on where they are, the homesickness, if you will, the opportunity to return closer to home arises, and they forget that they're under contract, I guess, or at least don't hold that contract to the standard that they ought to, and they walk away from the contract, and we will at least suspend their certificate for 1 year. And that goes on a national database. If districts in some other state are looking, they will see that the I guess their candidate has had their license suspended, their certificate suspended. So, but we hear those most frequently, I guess.
Okay. Thank you, Lou. Now, do all states then participate in this national database, as you mentioned? Because I guess one of the concerns I would have is if that a teacher had their license revoked in Idaho and then they come up to Alaska and try to get a teaching job up here, would we know that?
Yeah, we would know that, and I am quite certain, although I haven't had the conversation with the folks at the department, that before they grant certification, and Sandra Meredith could certainly speak to this, for grant certification for any candidate, they check the national database.
Okay.
I know we operate under the assumption that we want to make sure the appropriate sanction is given and that it is put on the national database to protect children in other states if there's any reason to do so. So we make that assumption that it is closely checked.
Great. Thank you, Lou, and thanks for your service.
Mr. Pandolfino, regarding the contractual relationship, do the contracts that you deal with primarily, are those the individual contracts, or would those be contractual concerns or issues that arise based on the school district's contract with the Education Association or some other entity that they deal with?
If I understand your question, if we're talking breach of contracts, is that correct?
Yes, for breach of contracts.
Yeah. There's the Alaska statute, and I forget what the statute number is that talks about the contract, the contractual obligation of a teacher. Now, most districts, in fact, it may be every other district but the Anchorage School District, teachers actually sign yearly contracts. But the statute says that a teacher is assumed under contract if they have not been dismissed, laid off, whatever, by the end of the school year, by the last day of student school year. We clarified it on the PTPC, and we said if a teacher on June 30th has not been released or has not resigned from their contract, they are assumed under contract for the following school year. So if sometime in July or August the teacher finds an opportunity in some other state, they will be sanctioned because they are under obligation to the state of Alaska for the following year. And it seems maybe a little bit harsh, but the fact of the matter is we don't have a really highly qualified wait list of teachers waiting in the wings to come up to Alaska, especially remote off the road system, Bush, Alaska, in August and September to fill positions. We can find young or warm bodies, if you will. We can find certificated people to fill positions, but to get the right teacher in there, you have to act early. And that's why, and I don't want to turn this into a lobbying session, that's why forward funding is so very important to the districts in Alaska, because then we will know what our FTE, what our staffing allocations will be early, and we can go after those young teachers, those moving teachers from the lower 48. 70% of our teachers in the Anchorage School District come from the lower 48. We can get them early before they secure positions elsewhere. So back to answer the question, after June 30th, all of our teachers are under contract for the following year, and if they decide to leave, they will. There is a minimum one-year sanction. It's written, I believe, in our professional teaching. I think it's advertised on our homepage, the PPPC homepage, that if you leave your contract after June 30th, you will be suspended for 1 year, your certification.
Thank you. And we would probably be disappointed if somebody didn't lobby us a little bit on some of those things that we're dealing with this year. What is
it's tricky. I don't know what the forum is here for that, but if I cross over the line, pull me back.
Yeah, that's okay. And what is the vote? Is it a simple majority vote of those present, or when you reach when you attempt to reach a resolution and vote on what you're intending to do, whatever the punishment may be or the outcome?
It is. It's a roll call vote for each sanction that involves at least a suspension, and it is majority vote. But we work and deliberate until we can gain consensus for the most part. I think there may have been one or two 8-to-1 votes, but mostly it's a unanimous decision after deliberations and discussions the Code of Ethics is it's black and white, and rarely is there a situation where it isn't clear. So consensus is usually gained.
Thank you. Any other questions that have arisen? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Pondopino, for your testimony, so to speak. Unless there is other objection, the Senate Education Committee will forward Mr. Pondolfino's name onto the joint session of the legislature for confirmation. And as a reminder, this does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation nominee during any further sessions. Let's see. We have one more to do, but that individual is with us. Okay. All right. Okay. Didn't... to make sure I don't mispronounce your name, it is. You please come forward, Miss Freitag. Is that how it's pronounced? Okay, good. Mari, the first name.
Yes.
Okay,
correct.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mari Freitag. I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and then why I got involved with student government, and why I was interested in being on the board. I was born and raised in Ketchikan. I graduated from Ketchikan High School in 2008, and then I moved up to Fairbanks, and I currently reside in Senator Thomas's district. I've lived there for about 4 years, and I'll graduate next spring with a degree in political science with a minor in justice. I plan on going to law school after that, and then I'll return to Alaska in some capacity. I'm not sure yet. I first became involved with student governance my freshman year. I became a student senator with the Associated Students of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which is our student government up there. I was a senator for 2 years, and then I was elected vice president, and then I was elected president last spring, and I'm currently still president. I was exposed to statewide university student governance in 2010 through the Coalition of Student Leaders. And that's when I started attending Board of Regents meetings. And then I learned of the opportunity to become the student regent. And so I was elected as one of the two candidates that would be forwarded from UAF to put in the candidate pool that the governor chose from. And then I was appointed last June. Actually, May. I started in June. Since I've been on the board, I've found it to be an incredibly rewarding experience to be able to represent over 34,000 students, roughly, is a really, really great experience because it's such a diverse and large student population that I do represent. I've learned a lot about the incredibly complex institution that the university is, and it's an experience that I would have never gotten anywhere else. And one of the things I like about it most is being able to return back to the Coalition of Student Leaders and the SUAF and talk to them about what's really going on within the university, and a lot helping them understand better how the university works and how they can forward their goals, I guess. And so that's essentially why I wanted to be on the board, and found it to be really great so far. So any questions?
Well, thank you. And just for the record, anyhow, the Board of Regents is comprised of 11 members who each serve an 8-year term, other than the student regent who serves a 2-year term. The board was established by the Alaska Constitution as responsible for the University of Alaska policy and management through the university president. And we have had, we have two staff, and maybe possibly more, but only two that I can think of, Senator Stevens' staff, Tim Lampkin, who was here before, he's still back there, hiding. Anyhow, was a student regent, and my staff, Joe Hardenbrook, was also a student regent, so we appreciated their service, and we appreciate the hard work they do, so it was a great experience for them. So with that, are there any questions? Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us this morning. This is very brave on your part. At least when you do it by radio or by teleconference, it's a little easier. And then plus you did both the House and now the Senate, right?
Yeah.
Were they nice to you over there on the House side?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay to say bad things about them over here.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the nice guys over here. Yeah. You saved the best for last. Right. Anyway, I'm just curious. Did you find that your K-12 education, your high school education in particular, adequately prepared you for college, or do you think we need to improve, maybe raise the academic standards a little bit in high school to better prepare kids for college? Because what we're hearing is that at the university level, they're spending a lot of time, money, and effort on remedial classes. And certainly that's got to be frustrating to the student, too, to have to, you know, take algebra again or whatever. So I'd like to just get your opinion. You went to a fairly large school, Ketchikan, and just wanted to know if you felt like you were adequately prepared for UAF.
Yeah, sure. I do believe I was adequately prepared. I did take a fairly rigorous class load, though. I believe I took 4 or 5 AP classes. I can't believe I don't remember. But I took quite a few AP advanced placement classes. And so those ones, particularly the English classes, I took both the composition and literature, I believe, AP courses. And those really actually prepared me the most. I do think that if I hadn't taken those classes, maybe, and I'd taken less rigorous classes, it wouldn't have turned out the same. But I like to challenge myself, so because of the class load I took, I do believe I was adequately prepared. My teacher, Ms. Bolin, she's an excellent English teacher. She teaches at K-High still, and she prepared me the most to write out of any of them, and so she did a really great job.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Yeah, well, that would probably explain your GPA was... It was over 4.0, so that's probably because of the AP classes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I noticed now your GPA at UAF is 2.9, so
oh, yeah.
I'm thinking it must be harder at the collegiate level than at high school.
Yeah, through the chair. I have a whole explanation for that, actually. My GPA has actually risen about 0.3 of a point since I've been on the board, surprisingly. I made the dean's list last spring, and I was chancellor's list last fall, and then I plan on being chancellor's list again this spring. I actually started my degree program with biochemistry. I was doing a Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry, which I love science, but I realized I wanted to be a lawyer, and so I changed. I went through biochemistry, then biology, and then I ended up with political science and justice. And so it was mostly the chemistry classes that explained that 2.9, not to, you know, use any excuses, but that's pretty much what it was. And my GPA is gonna, I'm hoping to get a couple more percentages of a point before I graduate, but it is rising. It's risen quite a bit in the last year, so.
Okay, great. But, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Please do.
Do you feel like you've received adequate counseling in college as far as, you know, what classes you should take if you want to become a Senator French or an attorney, or if you want to become a biologist or whatever you want to become, and how you can get that done in 4 years versus, in my case, 5 years?
Yeah.
I'd like to get your opinion on that.
What was your grade point? Yeah,
you know what my grade point
is. Sure, through the chair. I actually will be graduating in 5 years because I changed my major twice. And it's also I'm extending a little more so I can spend the whole 2 years on the board. I actually only have about 12 more credits required for my degree, but I have to be full-time for, through the next year. So I'll be taking other classes to expand my sort of exposure, I guess. But I have, since I've been in the political science department, I have an excellent advisor, and he's really, he's actually the chair of the department right now, and he's really, really good at basically warning me about certain mistakes that many students can make when they're going through college, such as you can't cross any classes for your minor with your major, and I didn't know that until he was my advisor. For whatever reason. So I have had good advising since I've been in the political science department. That's not really the case for every student, though, because it's different between all departments. All advisors can kind of choose how they want to advise their students, and it's something that I and the Coalition of Student Leaders have been focusing on, along with the president and the board, because it is a big issue, and it's something that I care about a lot, because I did have a not-so-great advisor when I was in my other programs. And so I know the difference that it can make when you have a good advisor versus one that kind of just signs your paper and sends you along your way. So,
okay, great. One more question.
Sir, right in.
Yeah, you're going to wish that you hadn't showed up in person here. So as the student regent, what is there like one burning issue you want to bring forward on behalf of the students to the regents as far as changes to the university system?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair. I actually, I'm not sort of the type to bring a radical change to an institution. I like to focus on things that I know that I can accomplish while I'm on a board like this. And one of the things I'm really going to be focusing on is tuition. Once tuition, that there's going to be a percentage raise, I'm assuming, sometime in the next couple months that they'll announce. And that's something that I'll be definitely focusing on. We didn't actually decide tuition last year because we started doing it only a year ahead, and this was the gap year. And so I actually haven't gotten to do what most student regents get to do, is argue about tuition. So that's something that I'm going to be focusing on a lot. And also the whole advising piece, just back to that, I want to make sure that the changes that are needed come out of the money that's being put in advising, because there's a difference between putting money at something rather than really identifying the problem and what really will make the biggest difference for students. And I think there might be a slight disconnect with that, but I really am going to be trying very hard to make the board understand exactly what the issue is for students in that respect. And so that's something that I want to focus on a lot.
Great, Maria. Well, I think you'll be perfect. So. Thank you.
Other questions? Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Senator Meyer asked a lot of good questions and asked most of the questions I would have asked. But I'll ask you this. You've been on the board for almost a year now, so it's not as if we're sort of vetting you to see if you're ready to be there. You are there already, and I'm sure you're doing a good job. But what's the most difficult issue you've had to deal with so far? Just for you personally, or maybe what you've seen the board itself wrestling with?
That's a difficult question. Through the chair. It's a difficult question. I knew somebody was going to ask this question in one of the houses, but
I'm so glad I did.
Sorry. The attorney here.
Yeah. I think I haven't come up against anything that's been super difficult for me yet. I really just anticipate that the tuition fight is going to be my most difficult battle. One of the most difficult things I personally have had to deal with is learning how to survive executive session, because lots of stuff happens in executive session that is a little difficult to deal with. And so that's been the biggest learning experience for me. But I haven't quite had to deal with anything that has been super difficult for me yet. There have been some decisions that were, it took me a little while to decide on, but in the end it wasn't, it just kind of came out and I realized what the right decision was. So
sure. Just a follow-up question or two, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Have there been any votes that you've been you've taken that were not unanimous on the board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were. Through the chair, there's been a few. I believe when we actually passed our budgets the budget request last November, that vote wasn't unanimous. And there's usually one or two people that will vote no on things occasionally. And so, sure. Yeah, but it's not always unanimous. I don't think I've gone through an entire board meeting yet that where every vote has been unanimous, I don't believe.
Back to the tuition, do you think that the legislature is doing a sufficient job of helping young Alaskans pay for college?
Through the chair. I think that the scholarship programs that, like the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Advantage Grant, I think they're very important to students. I think that those programs are something that need to happen in whatever capacity, because they will help lots and lots of students very directly. I would rather not pass judgment on, you know, how the legislature is doing to fund students, but I believe that programs like that would definitely help quite a bit, and it would be very beneficial to the state to fund those. So there was another, I think it's a bill coming out of, I'm not sure where it came out of, but it was House Bill 272 about the loan reduction, I believe. I'm not terribly familiar with it yet, but that bill seems like it would be something that would be hugely beneficial to the state as well, because it will encourage students to come back and decrease the brain drain, as it's called sometimes. I think that's a really, really good bill as well. So those things, I think, are really important.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The university budget is scrutinized, as are most of the budgets, or all of the budgets as they come before the legislature. Is there anything that you think that you can do sitting on the board to try and help convince the legislature that the money is being expended properly, or it's it is actually accomplishing its purpose to the best, the fullest extent that it can be?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the greatest way to accomplish that is just transparency. I mean, if we explain to you and we're very open with what exactly where the money is going to and how the program is being implemented, I think that's the best way to do that. And I, of course, am always willing to do that sort of thing. But yeah, I think that's transparency is just the most important thing with regard to that.
And usually it surrounds, at least much of the criticism surrounds the idea of new programs, expanded programs on an annual basis, but never anything let go, at least that is brought forward. I'm sure there are probably some things that are set aside or eliminated by the university, but it doesn't seem that becomes or isn't talked about much. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of just that concept of kind of an evolution as we move forward, that new classes, new programs, other things have to be let go, so that it's not just a continually growing, particularly where some classes have, or programs have, very few people participating in them?
Yeah, I mean, there's the provosts, I know, look very closely at that, at all of the MEUs, and I know that there's actually going to be a lot of cleaning house, so to speak, very soon. I've heard rumblings about it. And so it is very closely looked at. I mean, they do look at enrollment and how the demand is. And sometimes, I mean, we're seeing teach outs in different programs here at UAS, with, I think, the MBA program is having a teach out right now as well. Those, I think that they do a really good job of scrutinizing that. I mean, it ultimately, deletion of programs ends up coming to the board, and so if it's something that I know is really important to students, of course I'd say something, but I think they do a really good job as far as that goes,
okay.
As far as I've seen so far.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Davis.
Mr. Chairman, I don't really have a question, but I thank you for coming forward.
Yeah.
It's been very enlightening, and I'm so pleased that you're going to be serving on, I'm sure you'll be confirmed, I'm almost positive of that, but... I think you're doing an excellent job, and you gave me a lot of insights as to what you think as a student is helpful.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for your willingness to serve, and Unless there's objection, the Senate Education Committee will forward Ms. Freitag's name onto a joint session of the legislature for consideration. Thank you for being here today again. And as a reminder, this does not reflect anybody's intention to vote for or against the confirmation of the nominee during any further sessions as we move forward. Mm-hmm. And with that, is there anything else to come before the committee?
I think you can excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else to come before us this morning? Hearing nothing, we need to sign before we leave the room here, actually, so we get that done. And if there is nothing else to come before us this morning, our next meeting is Monday, March 19th, 8 a.m. right here in the Belts Room. We'll hear from President Pat Gamble of the University of Alaska. And if there's nothing else, we will stand adjourned.